And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Matuta.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Hands-On Apologetics. You have now entered into the Virgin Most Powerful's Apologetics Dojo. Gary Matuta, and glad to be with you today. It's always fun. This is the highlight of my day, to be able to sit down with you and chat about how to explain and defend the faith with charity, clarity, confidence. And got a great show in store for you today. Master Apologist Carlo Brassard from Catholic Answers joins us. We're going to talk about an issue that I think a lot of us, it's more of a frustration, I think, more than an issue. But why doesn't God make himself more known? You know, if God exists, the non-believers would say, then why is this so difficult for us to learn about his existence? Why doesn't he reveal himself? If he wants to have a relationship with us, why isn't it easier to have a relationship? Well, Carlo Brassard has done a lot of thinking in this area. He's going to come in and help us be able to answer those questions and objections. So it's going to be a lot of fun. It's always fun when Carlo comes into the dojo. He's an amazing apologist. Like I said, he always reminds me of like a high-end sports car, because on one level, his explanations are very simple, beautiful, elegant, very easy to understand. But if you ever ask him a question and you pop open the hood, it's like, man, there is a whole bunch of really intricate, high-end machinery going on underneath the hood. So he's an amazing apologist, and that's going to be a lot of fun. Very interesting topic indeed. And we also have our Finding the Fallacy, where we develop our critical thinking skills. Each episode we go through an informal fallacy of one sort or another, and just try to learn how to recognize when it's being used, and maybe even disarm it, you could say. And today's Finding the Fallacy is called the Push Question. So, you will encounter this, I guarantee you, during election seasons, but nevertheless, it is something that's used in many, many different areas of life. And we also try to expand our knowledge in the early church, because the early church fathers are part and parcel of defending and explaining the faith, because they are eyewitnesses to the earliest Christian faith, and they're distinctively Catholic. And so every episode we meet one of the early church fathers, and today it is Faustinus, who is probably not very well known, but nevertheless someone that we ought to know. And as always, you are part of the program. So, especially when Carlo comes on the show, if you want, give us a call, 888-526-2151. That is 888-526-2151. Or you can always send us your emails at questions@handsonapologetics.com. And we love your emails. Maybe you're in the situation. Maybe you just found out a loved one or somebody that you, a friend at work or somebody you care about, is talking about leaving the church. You're not really sure what to do. Or perhaps you're sharing the faith with someone and you'd like some advice, or just throw it out there. If maybe you use the explanation that seems particularly helpful and would like to share your wisdom, shoot us an email at questions@handsonapologetics.com. It's questions@handsonapologetics.com. And every email comes into the dojo mailbox, and I do reply to them, although not all make it to the airwaves. But nevertheless, they are all appreciated, and I'm very glad to help in any way I can. Now it's time for our shout-outs. Hello, everybody watching live stream on social media, Facebook, YouTube. Hey, gang. Oh, man. Check out the emojis. Love it. Yeah, it's great. I only wish I could see the Facebook feed, but I don't know if the Facebook feed actually has a live form. It probably does. I'll have to figure out how to get all the feeds up here so I can see what's going on social media while the show's going on. And and Michelle, by the way, you're welcome. I love answering your emails. And I also want to welcome all you listening live on radio. Thank you for tuning in. It's like I said, this is a show that's good, but it's also good for you. The more you listen to it, God willing, the more you know about Jesus and the more you love Jesus. And that is why I get up every morning. That is why I read research. That's why I do the program. And, you know, that makes my day. If I could just help one person know a little bit more about our Lord, love him a little bit more, then the day is complete. And it's time for Pop-Tarts and Coca-Cola. All right. So why don't we jump into our exercises? Finding the fallacy, push questions. I don't even know if I need to explain what a push question is, because if you ever got one of those political ad robocalls, they will give you a whole bunch of push questions, or someone comes at your door, plugging a candidate or a proposal. You've encountered that, or even just salespeople, they will do push questions. And basically what it is a question that's designed to make you answer in a certain way. It's not interested really in your opinion on something, but it's really to kind of guide you through a conversation without you actually being part of the conversation, I guess you could say. I saw a really good quote on the web that says that it's a question that attempts to limit direct replies to those they serve as the questioner's agenda. In other words, it proposes questions that will serve the agenda. And there are usually questions that you just can't deny. For example, you know, someone would come up to you and say, hey, wouldn't you love to save a lot of money? Well, you'd have to be crazy to say, no, I wouldn't. I love spending money. In fact, I want to spend money. I want to waste a lot of money. You know, no one will say that. That's a push question. It's designed to get you engaged in a particular area of conversation that really, you know, what other options do you have to say? But yes, or perhaps you have missionaries at your door, maybe Jehovah Witnesses, and they'll say to you, wouldn't you like to end world hunger and poverty? Or don't you think that the world is falling away from God, or something like that? And the whole idea is like, you have to respond a certain way, otherwise you would be crazy. Or do you think that God's really in charge of the world? You know, your answer would be yes or no, depending on what they want you to do. So, yeah, whenever somebody asks me a push question, if I'm in a humorous mood, I probably shouldn't share this on the air, but sometimes I give them the wrong answer just to see what they do. I had a good friend. We developed a great friendship with a Jehovah Witness named Bob come to the door. And one day I decided to try that. And he said, you know, don't you think the economy is bad? People are losing more, you know, losing jobs and all this stuff. And of course, you know, he's expecting me to agree with him. I said, no, I think it's great. I think there are more job opportunities. There's more opportunities to explore new technology and things like that. And I tried to have an upbeat thing. And I remember Bob's face. He just kind of like looked at me, like bewildered, because I think I was the only person of hundreds of people to actually take the other position. But, you know, nevertheless, it did open up a conversation, although it probably was pretty entertaining for my friend Bob the J-Dub. So anyway, that's the finding and fallacy for today, the push question. Meet the early church father. Today's early church father is Faustinus, who flourished roughly around AD 380. He's known mainly through his acquaintance with another person, St. Lucifer of Cagliari. I believe that's Cagliari. I believe that's how you pronounce it. The Bishop of Sardinia. Now, don't worry. This is, you know, this particular bishop wasn't a Luciferian. You know, he wasn't satanic. That was his name. It was a pagan name. And this particular Lucifer was one of the West's most adamant defenders of orthodoxy of the Nicene Creed. But unfortunately, the Council of Milan condemned St. Athanasius. Lucifer refused to be a party of such treachery against such a great man. And for his intransigence, he was exiled in the East in 355 AD. So up to that point, he was actually a pretty honorable man. And when Arianism was finally carried to its logical and abominable conclusion, namely antinomianism, a term meant to express the view that the Father and Son are unalike in all things. The Nicene Party saw absolutely necessary for closing ranks and basically fighting the Arians, insisting on the word homoousios, which means of the same substance. And so those who are formally regarded as enemies of the faith, those who subscribe to a similar word, which means of like substance, they kind of banded together against the Arians. And that included there was some unity, but there was also a lot of squabbles. Lucifer, this bishop of Cagliari, would not yield. He wouldn't join ranks. He wanted to be a purist. And in fact, he became a schismatic. And his followers are known as Luciferians. Now, again, this is not the modern incarnation. This is an old heresy, or a schism, actually, not a heresy. And they continued in the schism for about 20 years until the death of this bishop, around 390. And like I said, it's really the only connection we have with Faustinius is that Faustinius was one of the devout followers of St. Lucifer of Cagliari, the Bishop of Sardinia. So not a lot of biographical information, but it does explain his point of view in terms of his writings. And so that is our Meet the Early Church Father. Coming up on the other side of the break, we have Master Apologist Carlo Brassard coming into the dojo, and we're going to talk about the frustrations involved with the quote-unquote hiddenness of God. Stay tuned, everybody. We'll be right back.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody. Hands-On Apologetics. And, there's several objections out that non-believers give about God, one of which is, why does God, if he does exist, why is it so darn hard to prove that he exists. You know, and so to help us sort through that and other related objections and questions, we have Master Apologist Carlo Brassard, who is a native of Crowley, Louisiana. He left a promising music career, devoted himself full-time to the work of Catholic apologetics, and for more than a decade, he's traveled the country teaching apologetics, Bible studies, theology, philosophy. Carlo has written and published several articles in Catholic Answers magazine. He's, of course, you've heard him on Catholic Answers Live. He blogs a lot at Catholic.com. And by the way, you can find out more about all the things he's up to at www.carlobrassard.com. He's probably one of the most dynamic and gifted Catholic speakers out there, and we are truly blessed to have him in the dojo. So, Carlo, welcome to Hands On Apologetics.
Hey, Gary. Thanks for having me, brother. It's always great to be in the dojo with you, man.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, I think I sent you an email that yesterday we had your mentor coming to the dojo, Father Robert Spitzer.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, I was blessed to work with him in the Majus Center for about two and a half years. Yeah.
Yeah, amazing guy. You know, we were running out on time on the last segment. Ben, check this out, folks, on the podcast. And I asked Father Spitzer to explain heuristic notions in 13 minutes. And he knocked it out of the park. It was amazing.
So yeah, he is literally one of the greatest minds in the church in America that we have. I mean, he's right at the genius level. I've been blessed to work with him in a very close way, and I've encountered things that all I can do is just say, wow, he is truly amazing. So he's a great gift to the church indeed.
Yes, absolutely. And you are too. So
Bless you. God bless you, Gary. I appreciate it.
Well, you definitely are because, man, we're working through your book, and we've come up to a section that I hear a lot, and this I know this is difficult for apologists to explain, but non-believers say, well, if God really exists, then why is it so hard to show his existence? Why can't we just open the window and see God out there?
Right, right. Yeah, no, it's a very powerful objection. It's sort of a subspecies of the problem of evil, you know. So it's this idea that if God were all good and all knowing and all wise, then you would think he would manifest himself in ways that could ensure that we know he exists at least, or possibly ensure that we have a relationship with him. This problem, the so-called problem of divine hiddenness, also known as the argument from reasonable non-belief, it takes on a variety of shapes and sizes. So in my book, I articulate two forms, and we'll see if we'll be able to give a response to the two forms. So one form, Gary, is this idea that, well, if God exists, well, then at least he would convince me that he exists, providing me with absolute evidence that removes all doubt. That's one form, that at least to show me that he exists, and then which leaves for me the option to be able to choose to enter into a relationship with him or not. The other form that it could possibly take, the problem of divine hiddenness, that is if God were all good and desired a love, a relationship with us, well, then he would ensure that we would be in a relationship with him by giving us some extraordinary grace, such as the grace of the beatific vision, to ensure that we can't do anything but love him. So you have one form saying, well, at least he would make his existence evident to our intellect to where no work is to be done on our part, leaving the room to choose him, or the option, the other option being God would at least manifest his essence to us in a way that we couldn't do anything but choose him, such as the blessed in heaven. So I see those as two distinct forms of the problem of divine hiddenness that requires different responses. And so I guess what we can do today, Gary, is we'll try to, you know, pick each of those targets and see which sort of arrows we have in the quiver. So do you want me to continue moving forward and address maybe that first form?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. All right. So I think, first of all, I think an important point to make, Gary, first right off the bat is this, that just because there's no evidence that God gives us to the mind to where we can't do anything but conclude God exists, right? Let's just concede that argument for argument's sake right now that, you know, we don't look outside and see God, so there's no self-evident empirical evidence that he exists. And the proposition God exists is not self-evident to us, so some work is required. Even though God doesn't manifest himself to the mind in such a way that we can't help but say God exists, it doesn't follow from that that it's not reasonable to believe that God exists. And here's an example. You know, consider a young man, you know, with his fiance, and they're about to get married, and they're about to, you know, get married in this upcoming weekend or something. The young man has good reason to think that his fiance loves him based upon everything she's done for him in their courtship. You know, she's, you know, bringing him gifts and she's telling him that she loves him and she gives him, you know, and she's, you know, spending time with him and does all sorts of sacrifices for him to help meet his needs, etc. Now, that young man, the idea that his fiance loves her, it's not present to his mind in such a way that he cannot possibly doubt it, right? There is still some room for doubt, possibly, because she could be deceiving him in all of these loving actions, right? But even though he doesn't have that sort of absolute indubitable evidence that she loves him, it's still reasonable for him to go on the altar this upcoming weekend and say, I do, and commit his life to her for the rest of his life, because there's good evidence to do so. So even though God, for argument's sake, doesn't manifest his existence to our minds in such a way that we can't do anything but acknowledge that he exists, it doesn't follow from that that it's not reasonable to believe in him. Because there are arguments that scholars put forward out there that can lead to probable knowledge, like, for example, the fine-tuning argument, right? Such, you know, the fine-tuned physical properties of the universe, such as the universal constants, that sort of leads reason to the conclusion that it's very unlikely our universe was so finely tuned for the development of life that there's not an intelligent creator behind it. So that's a reasonable conclusion, and so somebody could have reasonable evidence. So I think that's the first point to make. But here's another strategy that I employ in my book, Gary, and that is to say it's befitting of God's goodness to allow man to rationally inquire about his existence. So I would argue that there's something good, there's a good that belongs to the nature of human beings to engage in rational inquiry in order to arrive at the conclusion that God exists. And because it belongs to our nature as rational beings to engage in rational inquiry, it's befitting of God's goodness to relate to us in such a way in order to allow for us to do some work on our part to arrive at knowledge that he exists, rather than simply manifesting his existence to our minds in such a way that we can't do anything but acknowledge he exists. And so this is a distinct mode of knowledge that God bestows upon us in as much as he makes us human beings. We're not angels, right? As St. Thomas Aquinas articulates in the Summa Theologiae, for angels, which we can only know by divine revelation, have knowledge by way of infusion. There's no discursive reasoning going on where you got to sort of look around and then reason from step one to step two, premise one, premise two, then the conclusion. The angels, as pure spiritual beings, have knowledge immediately, intuitively. It's infused with them. But that's not our mode of knowledge as human beings. As human beings, as body-soul composites, we have to use our sensory experiences, we have to look out into the world, observe things, and then engage in intellectual activity to abstract what things are, their essences or their forms, as we say in Aristotelian philosophy. And then we have to discursively reason. We have to reason from premise one, all men are mortal. Premise two, Socrates is a man, therefore conclusion, Socrates is mortal. That's the distinct mode of knowledge that we have as human beings. And so it's befitting of God's goodness that he would relate to us in accord with our distinct mode of knowledge and allow for us to engage in rational inquiry, discursive reasoning, in order to come to knowledge that he exists. And of course, with that, Gary, there comes the possibility to fall short of arriving at that knowledge, right? There's the possibility of getting it wrong. Now, of course, if somebody gets it wrong, we don't have to fret, right? You don't have to be worried, you know, and start having a panic attack, because the church, you know, in light of sacred scripture and sacred tradition and what Jesus taught us, there are some reasonable responses or reasonable things to say, sources of consolation for that person who may very well not arrive at the appropriate conclusion that God exists. And we can talk more about that, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah, very good. Because if you think about it, if the existence of God was just a brute fact, I think most of us would stop at that. Well, God exists. Yeah, that's it. But since it's required that we use our reason to inquire, you know, and to demonstrate it, I think by doing that, a lot more, we learn more about God, and we also learn more about reason.
Amen to that. You know, you could, if I were to formulate it, and here's what I do in the book, I kind of give a little syllogism to formulate the argument that I'm putting forward here. Premise one, God wills whatever is good for man. Premise two, rational inquiry is good for man. And that's precisely because it's a distinct, it's our unique, distinct mode of knowledge as a body soul composite, and so therefore God wills rational inquiry. Okay, now you brought up a good point, namely of the good of rational inquiry helping us to learn about reality, learn more about God, and I would even argue, as I argue in my book, that it can contribute, Gary, to more certain knowledge, so that our embrace of the our ascent to the truth that God exists is more certain and strong by reasoning through the steps to arrive at knowledge of God's existence. And I'll tie a pretty bow on that on the other side of the break.
All right, sounds great. We're talking with Master Apologist Carlo Brassard about the so-called hiddenness of God. Stay tuned, everybody.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference, or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith, because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
And welcome back, everybody. We are chatting with Master Apologist Carlo Broussard on the so-called hiddenness of God. And right at the break, Carlo gave us a great syllogism. Premise one, God wills whatever is good for man. Premise two, rational inquiry is good for man. Therefore, conclusion, God wills rational inquiry. So you wanted to tie that up on the other side of the break.
Yeah, what I was trying to say, I was trying to get the locomotive going there. What I was trying to say is that the rational inquiry, or the process of rational inquiry into God's existence, can contribute to a firmer conclusion that our assent to the truth that God exists can be had with more certainty than without the rational inquiry, as if, you know, God just simply manifesting himself. Or for example, think about this, Gary. Think back to your days in math class, right? Your math teacher would always say what? Show your work. she never let us go to the back of the book and look up the answer, right? Why did we have to show our work? In order to work through the steps so that we can learn the material better. And that when we come to the conclusion that we have knowledge of the answer and not merely belief concerning the answer. Because if we look it up in the back of the book and we say, yeah, this is the answer, well, then we simply have belief, and we're believing based upon the testimony of the author. But when we work through the steps ourselves and we arrive at the conclusion, we come to have knowledge, right? A certain knowledge that the conclusion is so. So when we work through the steps of reasoning to God's existence and we come to our conclusion that God exists, and we're working through certain metaphysical principles such as being and essence and actuality and potentiality, like in all of these arguments such as Aquinas' five ways, when we come to those conclusions by way of metaphysical demonstration, where the premises are either self-evident or can be reduced to self-evident premises, then we have scientific knowledge in the Aristotelian sense, certain knowledge, metaphysical certitude, which is the highest kind of certitude that we can have in human knowledge, even over and above what the certitude that we have with empirical sciences. And so the rational inquiry can lead us to have more certain knowledge that God exists, and that's a good thing. And furthermore, I think we'll come to appreciate that knowledge more. I mean, how many times, just in a common human experience, Gary, when we have to work for something, right, with blood, sweat, and tears, and we achieve that for which we're working, we come to appreciate that good in a higher way, do we not? And so the same, I think, can be said with the rational inquiry into God's existence. When we put forth the work and the effort and we arrive at the conclusion that God exists, we're going to appreciate that knowledge more so than if we didn't have to go through the work. And even just in raising our kids, we often talk about as parents, Gary, that, you know, we're not going to spoil the child and just give them the reward. You know, we're going to make him put forth some form, some form of effort in order that he or she, the child, can appreciate the award. Now, the award. Now, this brings us to the point that I raised earlier. What if somebody says, well, golly, Carlo, you know, I'm a reasonable guy. I'm rolling up my sleeves day in and day out. I'm looking at these philosophical arguments for God's existence, Carlo, and I'm not seeing the conclusion. I'm not seeing how you're arriving at the conclusion. So does that mean I'm like automatically damned or something? And then the answer to that would be, of course not. You know, God is perfectly just. And if he's perfectly just, he's not going to unjustly punish anyone. So if the lack of conviction in the conclusion God exists is through no fault of that person, well, then God will judge that person based upon whatever reasons that person is not coming to the conclusion that God exists. And the Catechism actually teaches this in paragraph 2125, Gary. It talks about atheism being a sin against the virtue of religion. Now, when it says that, it's speaking on the objective level. The act by which I say God does not exist is a sin against the virtue of religion. But the Catechism goes on to point out the imputability of this offense can be significantly diminished in virtue of the intentions and circumstances. And then it goes on to say this, check this out, believers can have more than a little to do with the rise of atheism. To the extent that they are careless about their instruction in the faith or present its teaching falsely or even fail in their religious, moral, or social life, they must be said to conceal rather than to reveal the true nature of God and a religion. So what the Catechism is getting at is that sometimes believers are a cause of divine hiddenness. So an atheist doesn't have to fret, you know, in saying, well, if I'm not coming to the conclusion, I'm a reasonable guy and I'm not seeing it, they don't have to somehow think that they're automatically damned. And this comes from the Second Vatican Council and the Dogmatic Constitution on the Church Lumen Gentium. The council states that divine providence doesn't deny the helps necessary for salvation to those who, without blame on their part, have not yet arrived at an explicit knowledge of God, and with his grace strive to live a good life. So it's possible that someone, through no fault of their own, simply cannot be convinced that God exists, and God will judge that person based on that. But nevertheless, I think the bottom line, Gary, is that we can put forward good reason to think that God would allow this room for us to do some work on our part, to put forth some effort and rational inquiry to arrive at knowledge that he exists in order to have scientific or demonstrative knowledge. And that's a good thing. Now, granted, does this totally dispel the darkness? No. But I do think it shows how it's reasonable to say that an all-good, perfect God can exist and at the same time not manifest himself to our minds in such a way that we have that there's nothing left for us to do to know that he exists. So those are some strategies that we can employ in order to approach that specific form of divine hiddenness, namely, you know, that God doesn't manifest his existence to our minds in such a way that there's nothing left for us to be done.
Yeah, that's especially clear, I think, if you look at the flip side. Let's say God did manifest himself, that he gave us all a fused knowledge of his existence. We would use our reason to explain it away as some sort of evolutionary quirk or, you know, some sort of pathological, you know, defect in the human mind that you need to go to a psychiatrist to get this idea of your head. Because they would say, well, why doesn't God give us, you know, allow us to rashly demonstrate his existence? Why is it only just idea in our head?
That's right. So this idea of an innate idea that he's putting within us prior to any sort of rational investigation. Yeah, you know, if God were to manifest his existence on an empirical level, like looking outside, like, well, I see the tree or something, or he's like putting some sort of sign in the sky, I think someone will definitely try to explain that physical phenomenon away, right? As opposed to saying, oh, yeah, God exists, right? But I do think, you know, God being the author of our minds can in some way manifest his existence to the mind in such a way that it becomes self-evident to the mind, right? So, like, whenever the mind comes to know the meaning of whole and part, and it, so, and immediately, self-evidently sees the whole is greater than the part, I think that God, who is self-evident, his existence is self-evident in itself, although not to us, I do think he could manifest his existence to the mind in such a way that it would be self-evident, and there would be no work left to be done to where we would have to arrive at it, nor could we possibly explain it away. And this is, we kind of have a similitude with first principles of knowledge, like the principle of non-contradiction, right? In order to deny it, you have to use it. So it's metaphysically impossible to deny that principle in thought, and even it's metaphysically impossible to deny it on the level of being as well. So I do think that God could do it, but he doesn't, right? But just because he doesn't, I don't think that's good reason to reject God's existence and embrace atheism.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And like I said, you know, I think it's kind of one of those you know, I played the flute for you and you didn't dance. We sang a dirge and you didn't mourn. It's like no matter which way you choose, you could always flip it around and say, well, yeah, but if God really existed, you know, either he'd make himself self-evident or he would make it possible for us to make demonstrate his existence.
Right, right. And then, of course, you know, I don't know if you're ready to turn our arrows to the other target. You know, the question of why doesn't, so maybe God has good reason not to manifest his existence, so that's that particular form of the problem of divine hiddenness. But what about this question of why doesn't God manifest his divine essence to us in such a way, like the blessed in heaven, we can't do anything but choose him and be in a relationship with him? And that's also poses a great mystery that I think ultimately, I mean, even with the first form of the problem of divine hiddenness, ultimately, Gary, when it boils down, the bottom line is that, you know, God's ways are not our ways. He is infinite. We are finite. So we cannot expect to arrive at a certain conclusion as this is the reason why God doesn't manifest his existence to our mind or doesn't manifest his essence to ensure a relationship with him, because he can have reasons that go beyond what we can possibly come to know. What we can conclude is that God, it's not true to say God has no reason, right?
Yeah,
so we can conclude with certainty that God does have reason, being infinite and all good. It would follow from that. But what those reasons are, we can only offer and speculate about in order to show coherence between God's goodness and this sort of room that he gives for people to have to inquire about his existence and him not manifesting his essence to ensure a relationship.
Very good. Well, we're talking with Carlo Brassard about the so-called hiddenness of God. Fascinating subject. More to come on the other side of the break. You're listening to Hands on Apologetics with Gary Puta. Stay tuned, everyone.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-1220. 526 2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody. Hands-On Apologetics. We are chatting with Master Apologist Carlo Brassard about the so-called hiddenness of God. And Carlo just done a masterful job working through why doesn't God just give us infused knowledge? Why is it so hard to prove his existence? And on the other side of break, we were just broaching another version, which is essentially, if God wants a relationship with me, why doesn't he stack the deck so that I can't help but have this relationship with him? Did I encapsulate that right? Or?
Yeah, no, I think you hit the nail on the head there, Gary, because essentially what that question amounts to is, why doesn't God just give us the beatific vision? Why doesn't he create us with the beatific vision? I mean, we could push it all the way back to Adam and Eve. Why didn't God create Adam and Eve with the beatific vision, right? Because the only way, Gary, according to my understanding of human nature and free will and what I've learned in studying St. Thomas Aquinas, the only way, in just the 2,000 years of tradition of Catholic tradition and theology, I've come to the conclusion, based upon my research, that the only way that God can ensure that we choose him and not choose something else besides him and reject him is that he gives us the vision of his divine essence. Without vision of divine essence, of his divine essence, the possibility to choose evil or to choose some perceived good outside of the order of God is possible, right? That possibility exists. Without vision of the divine essence, the possibility of sin always remains. So the question is, why doesn't God give us the divine essence and vision of the divine essence in order to ensure, at least now at least, right, in order to ensure that we have a relationship with him? And I think, as I try to point out in my book in one of the appendices, is I think there's something, Gary, to the dignity of being a real cause of our own moral perfection and achievement of our final end. And here's the idea. God's providence consists of leading things to their ends or goals, right? He is the ultimate wise, all-wise being who orders and governs all things to their ends, to their goals. That's the office of the wise man, according to St. Thomas Aquinas in his Summa Contra Gentiles in Book 1, Chapter 1. He starts off, the office of the wise man. The wise man directs things, orders things to their ends. And that's what God does ultimately as the supreme being who has governance over all of creation. And God wills for us, he bestows upon us a great dignity to be able to participate in his providence, in his governance, in ordering our own lives with him, through him, and in him to our ultimate end, namely union with him. So that when we achieve our final perfection of union with him, that reward of eternal life is in some way based on my contribution. Now, granted, this is not an exclusion from grace. It's not, you know, a Pelagianism or even a semi-Pelagianism where I'm, you know, picking myself up by my own bootstraps in order to achieve my final perfection, because the movement to my final perfection is initially started by God's grace, that initial grace of justification, and any good deed or charitable act that I do in that journey and movement toward my final perfection is done in and through and by grace. Anyway, for my works to contribute to my final salvation, it must be done in and through and by God's grace. But nevertheless, God wills that there be a human cooperation involved with our achievement of our final end. And there's a great dignity, that's a great dignity, Gary, because God is allowing us to be incorporated into his action of divine providence, of governance, of governing the world, leading things to their own end. And this principle is found in Aquinas' writings. He talks about the dignity of causality being imparted even to creatures, that that's a manifestation of God's goodness, that he would allow creatures to share in his causality and bring about real effects and to cause goodness in other things, including ourselves, that through our choices, Gary, we can order our lives to our final perfection and be a real cause of that effect. And that manifests, I would argue, that manifests God's goodness more than if God were to simply give us our final end, namely vision of his divine essence, without our cooperation with him in ordering our lives to our final perfection. We would lose the great good, dignity, and nobility of participating in the office of the wise man, right? Of ordering our lives to our ultimate end. So I think a great good would be lost had God created us, or created Adam and Eve and created us, by simply giving us the divine vision of the divine essence without our cooperation, as opposed to allowing us to cooperate with him and order our lives to our final perfection. So that's one of the things I point out in my book, Prepare the Way.
Yeah, boy, he said a lot too. You're right, because that is part of a perfection that wouldn't be there had God decided that, you know, everything is going to be his causality and there's no cooperation. In fact,
it kind of borders occasionalism, you know?
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
Yeah, the philosophical worldview that God does everything and we are in no way real causes of real effects. But God wills, as a manifestation of his goodness, to be, obviously, he's the ultimate cause and nothing happens or is without God's ultimate divine causality. But nevertheless, creatures can be real causes to bring about real effects, and that's a great good.
Yeah, and doesn't Aquinas say that there's two causes? There's the divine cause, and then there's the secondary cause in the thing itself.
Sure, the fact that we can be real causes and bring about real effects, and even non-intelligent beings can be real causes to bring about real effects. Right. This philosophers refer to such causality as secondary causality, God being the primary cause. And the reason why is because, think of it like this, Gary, I am being a real cause of the real effect of communicating ideas to your mind and ideas to your listeners. At least I hope I'm doing that successfully, right?
You are.
And not muddying the waters here. So I'm a real cause of real effects, but my causal power is actualized only in as much as God is causing it to be. So I have the power to be a cause and bring about real effects only insofar as God is causing me to be and for my power to be, you see. So there is this cooperation between God being the ultimate cause and the reason why I even have the power to be a cause and can even actualize that power and bring about real effects.
Yeah, that's very good. In fact, it's kind of providential you bring it up, because next week we have Robert Riley come on and talk about the closing of the Muslim mind. And so we're going to be talking about occasionalism. So the flip side of this.
Right. There you go. There you go. And one last point before we wrap it up here, Gary. I wanted to point out that, you know, this idea of God allowing for mankind to make a commitment to him. Yes. I wouldn't say that belongs to the essence of a loving relationship, because otherwise we're going to have to deny the blessed in heaven as having a loving relationship with God. But I would say that it is a great good, as this kind of loving relationship, to have that room to make the commitment. And this is something that we value in our own lives. We prefer freely chosen marriages to arranged marriages, right?
Right, yeah.
We value that choice to – now, granted, that's not to say arranged marriages can be valid marriages, and people can have a loving relationship in those arranged marriages. But we prefer – the ability to make the choice to commit, because it expresses just how valuable the other individual is to the one who's making the choice. And so we value that. But then the question is, well, you know, what does man gain? I mean, obviously God doesn't gain anything from us making a commitment to him. So what's in it for us in that God would allow for us to make a choice to commit to him? Well, I think, first of all, it reveals how great God is compared to other things. Because we must commit to him as our highest good, that reveals to man that other goods, as good as they are nothing compared to the highest good, who is God. So we come to an awareness of God's greatness, but it also reveals knowledge of God's It also reveals our own value, Gary, because if God is the highest good and he calls me into a loving relationship with him, well, then that reveals just how valuable I am, you see, and that we are, that we have a great dignity in that we are called to be united to the highest and supreme good, namely God himself. And that is a source of gratitude. That's a source of happiness. And so I think there is a good, a great good, in fact, in God allowing for us, creating us in such a condition without vision of the divine essence, and calling us to make a commitment to him, and then the reward being the vision of the divine essence, in which we cannot sin, in which we can only choose the good, and any finite good is ultimately ordered to the infinite good, namely God himself. And that's what we will experience in heaven, and that degree of happiness will be more intense due to our efforts that we put forth in ordering our lives to our final end. For the more effort we put forth in loving God and following him and directing our lives to him, the greater degree of happiness we will experience in the beatific vision.
Very good. Well, Carlo, outstanding job. It's incredible. The hour has just flown. How can people get a hold of your work?
Yeah, well, they can check me out at Catholic.com or my own website, CarloBroussard.com, and they can get my book, Prepare the Way, at shop.catholic.com.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been terrific.
You're welcome, Gary. Thank you, brother.
All right. Carlo Broussard, everybody. Coming up tomorrow, you know, great, great guest. We got Steve Ray, Father Robert Spitzer, Carlo Broussard. Tomorrow we're going to Dr. Douglas Beaumont's coming into the dojo. Great stuff. Coming up next, the fun continues with the Terry and Jesse Show. High intensity Catholic talk coming at you. It's time for me to shut down the Midwest Command Center, turn off the dojo lights. I hope everybody has a great day. And God willing, talk tomorrow.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood.
But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.